I'll let you go. This is Guy James from The Guy James Show, and as I always say, you've already heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Stay tuned for Peter coming up at the top of the hour.
Kids, it's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 138 of this crazy little thing called love that we formally refer to as Strictly Confidential. I want to thank Guy James. Guy James was the host that you heard filling in for Bob. Guy's from South Florida and a veteran in radio and always has lots of people who tune in and listen to him Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 3 till 5 p.m. right here on the Head On Radio Network. We are a far-flung bunch here at the Head On Radio Network. Guy in South Florida and myself in North Florida. We have John over in Australia, and Lord knows where the rest of us are. I know that Mark Levine is in Washington, D.C., but I've kind of lost track of where we all are. In any case, thank you, Guy, for filling it at the last minute. That was a great show. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively right here on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network, also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Stop by crmw.net and see what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Wednesday, April 30, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. on a Wednesday evening, April the 30th of 2008, you're listening to a live show, and you're welcome to call in and participate. I'll be giving out those numbers later. If you're listening via podcast, as so many of the listeners do, at a later date that's more convenient to you. Obviously, you can't call in, but nonetheless, welcome and thank you for your emails. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from past shows. You'll find links there to the chat room, which is active as I speak. A good evening to join us in chat. There are also links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you here on the show. There are also links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com to the main Head On Radio Network site, and there you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, of which I'm only a small part. You'll find links there and a PayPal button over at headonradionetwork.com to make it easier for you to support the Head On Radio Network. The toll-free line for participating is 877, the number 4, head-on. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. That translates into 877-443-2366 for those of you who like numbers better. If you have unlimited long distance, you could use that and save the studio nickel or buck, although we are more than happy to take the calls via 800 or 877 lines. The toll line rings in West Virginia, and that's 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I normally try to check the mail during the breaks. It's good to be with you this evening. We have Victor from Disco 935 Dot net, who is going to be DJing at the Gay Bar Across the Street segment this evening at 10:30. And we have a wonderful guest. Scott has been with us before on the show. He spent a couple of hours with us telling us about Gay American Heroes, the Gay American Heroes Foundation. The Gay American Heroes Foundation, if you missed that, it's a great interview. It's in our calendars. But they're building a traveling memorial to take to various communities throughout the United States to honor LGBT persons who have died as a result of hate crimes, of which there are so many. And Scott is joining us this evening to tell us about the visit to Tallahassee. Yes, Scott actually visited Tallahassee and lived. It's not an easy thing to do. It's a traveling monument, and in fact, it was the first time it had been displayed at the Florida Capitol. This was just this past Monday. And, of course, it was a significant date. This past Monday was Ryan Skipper's birthday. He was murdered in South Florida in what the police call an anti-gay hate crime. Scott Hull, welcome back to the show.
Peter, thank you. Thank you for having me back. This is awesome. I always enjoy talking to you, so thank you. And, yes, it was a historic day on Monday.
Well, Scott, we always enjoy having you. You're always so enthusiastic about what you do. It takes a lot of enthusiasm to stick with this day after day. Tell us about Tallahassee. What were the reactions, and who else was there? I'm so sorry I missed it. I had intended to go. There was a family. There was a conflict, and I wasn't able to make it, and I hate that. So I hope you'll fill us in.
Well, I was sorry that you weren't able to attend as well. I was so looking forward to seeing you in person. And it's a shame you didn't, but I do understand conflicts of schedules. So, wow, where do I start? Well, first of all, historically, it was the first LGBT exhibit ever allowed into the Capitol building and to the rotunda. So that alone was pretty exciting in itself. And then we had some amazing people that we had involved with us. We had Equality Florida. We had PFLAG. We had Safe School South Florida. And, of course, the Day Community Foundation, which is our foundation that manages our money for us. And they're very supportive and made us possible at a very early stage in our growth. So it was a team effort.
Wow, what a great list of people. And I would have so liked to have met them all. I've talked with Nadine Smith from Equality Florida. She's been on the show, but the others, I have not talked to any of the Florida representatives. I missed a lot, didn't I?
Well, we'll just have to get them on the show as well, because they all are fighting the same fight, and that is the rights of LGBT folks here in Florida and as well as throughout the United States. So, we'll schedule those on, and they all have amazing work they're doing, and I'm sure your listeners would really enjoy hearing what had to say and inform them on what they're doing and how they could help fight those fights, from, you know, the schools to parents who have gay kids that aren't accepted in the neighborhood. So it's a great group of people, is right. So, but real quick, it was Ryan Keith Skipper's birthday, and I really want to, you said at the beginning how I'm always enthusiastic. Well, knowing that Ryan's memory will never die, and, you know, Kennedy's memory will never die, and that this memorial is going to hopefully change the hearts and minds of so many people by educating them on how hate crimes, or gay hate crimes specifically, are overlooked and not realized of how many there are each and every year, and that in a free America, as long as our government discriminates us against us with the don't ask, don't tell, it is encouraging everyone else to do the same. And so today is another historic day in the sense that the actual bullying bill that we're up there trying to get passed was voted on by the Senate, and as of today, it has passed. So it's breaking, it's news, it's exciting, and all we have to do is have Governor Crist sign it, and it will be a law.
Now, I understand that Crist supports it, so there shouldn't be any issue at all with him signing the bill.
There should not be any problem, and I'm dreading from ear to ear. You know, it's quite an exciting weekend, and it's quite an exciting time for the LGBT community. But the fight is nowhere near over, and I don't want people to rest on this victory, because we are constantly having to fight for the amendment to the marriage constitution, the anti-gay marriage, and we also have to you know, they shot down anti-discrimination bill as far as firing you because of your sexual orientation or gender identity. But those are I bring awareness because with any of this discrimination that's going on, be it not allowing folks to adopt or for whatever the reason you're discriminating against an LGBT person or a family, it often results in what I'm doing, and that's trying to build a memorial remembering all those who are courageous enough to live openly gay and that are murdered because of it.
Well, Scott, regarding the anti-bullying bill, I couldn't be happier about it. These battles are always so hard fought and so hard to win. I understood it took 8 years of effort to get this anti-bullying bill passed.
Correct.
And I'm also seeing that initially the senators thought that it was just a boys will be boys sort of a thing going on and that we didn't really need any special protections for LGBT folks.
Well, unfortunately, it isn't specific in the groups meaning it, but when it was passed, the senator, I think it was Skidmore, but don't quote me on it, stated that it was all-encompassing of all anti-bullying. And so as long as it includes everyone and gay people, everyone, I think that eventually we will need to get specific and say specifically which groups need to be covered or to look at, because it's easily brushed off, as Pat Mulder said, and that's Ryan Skipper's dad. And so, it's a great victory, and now we're on the books, but we need to carry it further to make sure it's specific, you know, in targeting each group, because, it is constantly overlooked or swept under the carpet as being an anti-gay hate crime. They don't give it this. It's okay. It's still okay to say, you know, someone, that's so gay, or you're, you know, using the faggot word, pardon me, in terms of calling people names like that. And that's unacceptable, and we need to, you know, constantly be aware of it. And if it's going on, it needs to stop, especially in a school, a place of learning, where a teacher needs to be informed in how to deal with those situations. And that's what's so powerful about Safe Schools South Florida, or, you know, GLSEN, or any other organization that teaches teachers how to deal with students that are gay and people that are picking on students that are gay.
Well, Scott, you mentioned Ryan's father. Monday, April 28th, being what would have been Ryan's birthday, had to be a very difficult day for his parents. Were they present in Tallahassee?
They were, and they were so excited about their son. We all have to remember is no longer with us, and we will never have the opportunity to meet this wonderful soul who, through his life, has inspired so many people to be so proactive, and his parents have taken the lead in that, and they're very courageous folks. They have, you know, they've had a sheriff that, you know, said derogatory remarks and made accusations that were untrue about Ryan, and yet to this day has apologized to them, and that's sad in itself, and he's the one who's supposed to protect the community. And it's funny because the same sheriff is the same one that went on national TV almost a year to the day and said that, you know, it was unacceptable, the girl's behavior. If you saw the YouTube incident where the one girl was lured into a room and six other girls beat her up and unconscious, and they videotaped it. And that's the same sheriff in Polk County that did not go on national news and that said, you know, implied that Ryan was doing illegal activities, which were all found to be untrue. And he's yet to this day apologized. And I think that needs to be corrected.
Well, I agree. There was some derogatory coverage coming directly from the Sheriff's Department, I believe, before it was ever even investigated. They were just off-the-cuff remarks because of Ryan's orientation that they seemed to devalue him.
Correct. And that's when the Mulders had the opportunity, and I was unfortunately setting up the exhibit in the Rotunda, and I was unable to attend the meeting with one of the aides to the Attorney General, I believe it was. And they had positive results, and the attorney's aide informed the Mulders, from what I'm to understand, that it was unacceptable what the sheriff did, and hopefully they will investigate and look at it and try to correct that problem. And hopefully we'll be, you know, strong advocates in educating the law enforcement on how to handle and be respectful of other people's way of life.
Well, Scott, how are you treated by the media there? And do you think the media did, was there any local coverage or was it all state coverage?
We were on a lot of stations and it was all great. You know, I think that I wish I would have been a little more poignant, because as much as I love the media and what you're doing, I think the media is partially to blame, and let me clarify. It's often that the media's responsibility to inform their viewers what's actually happening, and because gay is still not quite accepted, they often overlook gay stories and don't focus on the fact that it was on, you know, the Today Show, Good Morning, whatever one, the host, Vieira, what's the, Meredith Vieira, who used to be on The View, love her to death, loved her on her show. She's interviewing the girls and the incident that happened in Polk County on the Today Show.
Yeah.
And that was as horrific as it was. It was a fight, and the girl survived. Now, Ryan was a year earlier brutally murdered, and it didn't make the Today Show. So I hold the media responsible partly for not informing everyone and letting the Mulder story be on the Today Show. And I'm asking that if any listeners or anyone out there that can bring this to light, like Ellen DeGeneres did with the murder of Lawrence King out in California, the 15-year-old that was shot in the back of the head at school in front of other students because he was openly gay. And Ellen preempted her show, or started her show off with, Lawrence was not a second-class citizen, and neither was she. And I think that all our media outlets need to cover every murder. Currently, I don't know if you know this, Peter, but we believe there are 8 gay murders, possibly 2 more, so a total of 10 gay murders here in the United States this year. And at the time of the 8th murder, it was happening about 1 every 10 days that a gay person was being murdered here in the United States.
And those
just freak me out. I don't understand why there isn't a national outcry.
Well, you're so right. It rarely gets beyond the local area, and which is why what you're doing is so important. And indeed, we aired the audio of Ellen. It was very touching. In fact, it brought tears to my eyes as she did interrupt her show to tell that story. And it occurs to me that parents, that when one sees a grieving parent, it really brings it home to so many people who are part of traditional families. I'm wondering, did the media interview the Ryan's parents to any degree, or were they pushed aside?
Yes, sir, absolutely, Peter. The local media interviewed the Mulders and covered them. As far as I was concerned, they did a great job. And my, once again, concern is that it's a national problem, so it should be national. So I was hoping that CNN and some of the other major networks would make it the 6 o'clock news or 60 Minutes or, you know, 2020 or any of the other major shows that covers this kind of stuff, because, you know, it's a problem everywhere, and bullying's problem everywhere, and you know, gay discrimination is a problem everywhere. And so until we unite as all Americans, because we're all Americans, and that's first, and to not treat everyone equally, well, once again, until our government starts treating us as first-class citizens and not as second-class citizens, then the, you know, the gay community will constantly suffer, and the end result is a murder. And I find it unacceptable that that's occurring here in this free America. I think America is the greatest country in the world, and I think they do a great job, but I think our government is under an administration right now that is not protecting all its citizens, and that is un-American and unacceptable and very sad, because it is the result of a 25-year-old kid or a 15-year-old kid being murdered because they're saying they're less than. And there's nothing less than about Ryan, there's nothing less than about Lawrence, and there's nothing less than about Ellen DeGeneres. Yet they're still treating them that way. And so I find it unacceptable, and I'm trying to shine a light on it and be an advocate for it.
Well, Scott, that's well said. And for those who missed the interview that you did only a month or so ago, Tell us about the exhibit and how you're raising consciousness. Some people may not know exactly what the exhibit was about.
You always ask the best questions, Peter, mind you.
You make it so easy. You're a great guy.
I think it's a team effort. You make me feel so comfortable. I just blab like a chatty Cathy. It's too funny, but it all comes from my heart, Peter. So I turn my brain off and I speak with my heart, and my heart's never lied to me. So with that said, Gay American Heroes is raising money now to build a national memorial that will travel educating folks about these horrific murders that are happening on a weekly, if not a daily basis here in the United States, about the LGBT community and the discriminations and the battles they're having to deal with on an everyday basis. And any person that's living openly gay in a city or in a county like Polk County, where the sheriff, you know, discriminates and you know, does not welcome the, you know, gay community with open arms with his defamatory statements, is an unsafe environment for someone to be openly gay. And there should be not one place in America where someone should not be safe and feel safe about being openly gay. And if any of those people that are deserves to be, and then are murdered, deserves to be honored as a hero as any other hero in any other fight. And there are so many people, quote, in the closet. Well, they shouldn't be, but they are because of fear. And that's why it's so important that we get rid of this fear. Well, we can't get rid of the fear until it stops that we, you know, quit being murdered for who they are. And it's, you know, that's life. So all those people, and there's been hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, and everyone thinks Matthew Shepard is the last one, and he's a, you know, and he was an amazing person, and I'm sure his duty has done amazing work to bring attention to it. But there's so many. So what I've done is tried to bring them all together and remember them all equally, because all of them are important to all of us, because they're our heroes, and that's what the memorial is going to do. And so it's going to travel throughout the United States. We've been invited to universities. We've been invited to Pride celebrations. We exhibited in Miami. Well, this is a scale model that we're using now, and I can't wait to have the full-size memorial, because at the same time of showing the memorial, we have a documentary that's being filmed of this whole process and the battles and the stories of some of these amazing people and the outcome. And it's actually very exciting to be a part of this and to be part of change in history. And you can, I mean, you're part of it, and anyone who gets involved with our project is a part of change and a betterment for us as human beings and the betterment of us as Americans. And, you know, all I can suggest is go to GayAmericanHeroes.com, shameless plug, but go to GayAmericanHeroes.com and learn more and send us an email. Let us know what you think and, you know, what you would like to do to get involved.
Well, Scott, I'm so glad you mentioned the site. We are, in fact, posting the site in the chat room, and I'm also glad you said it to the listeners who are not in chat. And again, that's GayAmericanHeroes.net, or is it .com?
It's .com.
They both work.
We do redirect, and so we register
so
.com.
.net. Good. So either way they use it is
we'll get us there.
Scott, how would you say that you are? Go ahead, please.
I'm sorry.
I was about to ask you how would you say you were treated specifically by the state of Florida in comparison to other places that you have exhibited? Do you feel like you got a prominent location or location that there was actually traffic? Do you feel that you were shuffled off to the side? How did Florida, how did the Capitol treat you?
Personally, the fact that I was in the Capitol, you could have put me in the basement and I'd have been happy. So if there is a basement, I don't know. I think we're prominent. The main traffic is on the fourth floor. We were on the second floor. We had our banner hanging on the railing, and it was an all-marble railing. And so from the first floor, when you came into security, you saw the banner. And then on the second floor, you could see the banner and the exhibit. And then on the third floor, you could see it all. So what I liked it then, well, I went up to the fourth floor, and I've never met experienced it. And it felt like I was at the New York Stock Exchange. I mean, there was so much traffic. And I don't know that we would have been seen by more people, and I'm sure we had an even greater impact. But for our first time there, I was quite happy with where we were. Would I like to have been on the fourth floor where all that traffic was? Yeah, but I don't know if I could have got a word in edgewise, because there were, you know, lobbyists and all sorts of things going on. So for a nice press conference and for a nice first time in the Capitol, I'm very grateful to being there, and I'm very thankful to all the people that made it all possible. So I'm always grateful for any opportunity to present the memorial.
Scott, is this the first state house that you've exhibited in? I realize the colleges and universities.
Oh, it is. It is the first state house that we had exhibited in, and yeah, very exciting. I honestly, you know, my best friend Jack led the first gay march on Washington, and I was thrilled to know him. I was thrilled to have him in my life, and him being my mentor and best friend. And roommate. And so, the fact that he led the first gay march on Washington, and here I had the first gay exhibit in the capitalist state of Florida, is kind of ironic, but exciting. And I'm leading, I would like to say that I'm leading, I'm bringing aware and hopefully going to lead the last march. And that's what I'm trying to call it. It's the last march on Washington. And the next time we go to Washington, we're not leaving until all LGBT community are treated equally here in the United States, because they're all equally paying taxes, they're all equally serving their country, if allowed, and they're all equally participating in what makes America great. And so I say this will be our last march on Washington, and hopefully with our new administration, whatever it may be, we'll have that. And so this memorial will, as far as I'm concerned, will travel until every gay person is treated as equal as every other American in the United States. And until then, this memorial will travel and bring awareness to the discrimination and hate that America is not known for, but has. And I want to eradicate that hate. It's like a cancer, and I want to eradicate it. And I also want to shine a light on those people that teach it and discriminate, because finding the problem is one thing, but stopping the problem, the only way we're going to stop it is when a 14-year-old has so much hate, and that's taught. Hate is not, you're not born hating. It was taught. And at age 14, to be taught to hate someone so much that you would take a gun in and shoot them in the back of the head in school because of who they are, there's a problem. And the problem starts with the people that are teaching the hate. And those people that are in the United States are domestic terrorists, as far as I'm concerned.
Well said. Scott, is the memorial going to grow? At least the one that travels, the traveling memorial, is it going to grow in the same way the AIDS quilt grew? Is it finite?
I would like to say no, it's not. But every time a murder happens, we will add another star to the memorial. And if it so happens that we run out of space on the memorial that we have to add another panel or increase its size, I hope that it doesn't. I hope that each year that we have less and less. So my hope is, yes. I mean, my hope is that it will not grow, but we are prepared if it does.
I see. And
that's where your listeners come in and play, and all the people who support the ideas and the goals of the American Heroes is encouraged to participate on so many different levels.
Well, Scott, your website is very comprehensive, and there are a number of ways to donate to the cause via mail, and I assume you have a PayPal button there also, is that right?
Correct. We have a wonderful program called Adopt a Hero, and for a $25 donation, you can adopt one of our many deserving heroes. We only have a few listed now because all our web work is volunteer work, and we're so busy with the different murders of like Simeon Williams, which happened a month or so ago, and helping his family get through these hard times, and, you know, exhibiting at different functions to bring awareness, to get the media coverage, to get the dollars donated. So, but if you go to our Adopt a Hero page, you can adopt one of the heroes. We'll send you a card telling you all about your hero, and it's a great way to say that you contributed, and hopefully you'll adopt a different hero every year. And we send you a card telling you all about your hero, and then we send a card to their family members letting them know that their son or daughter or lover or best friend was adopted, and their memory hasn't been forgotten, nor will it ever be forgotten.
I see. And do you see the the final placement of this, the permanent placement of this, when that comes about to be in Washington, D.C.?
Oh, you know I hope that big. You know my heart and my brain's that big. If yes, I really do. I believe that Frank Kameny, leader of the gay movement, as well as my friend Jack, had the first gay exhibit ever in the Smithsonian Institute recently, a museum, and or just the Smithsonian. And so, it was a historic day, and so I think that one day we'll have a memorial of some type. Maybe it might not be as big as what I'm, you know, hoping, but I believe we'll have a space somewhere, and because eventually it will be unacceptable to kill gay people for being gay, and then when that day comes, and when our rights are for all LGBT communities are advocated to the point that they're equal Americans, then we'll hopefully the murders will stop. We'll stop having to travel, and we'll have a resting place for all our heroes, just like all the other heroes that fought for our country, because we're fighting for our country as much, because it's a country of freedom, and right now it isn't free for everyone.
Well, Scott, on a personal level, these things take a huge commitment. Doing what you do, the people in Equality Florida doing what they do, and PFLAG, and even doing a show like this, these things take a great deal amount of time from your work and from your personal life. How are you bearing up under that?
Honestly, I wouldn't have it any other way. Would I like more help? Oh, yeah. The pressure is often great, but I'm a strong guy, and I know that if I give, somebody will take my place. But I wouldn't change it for a minute. There's nothing other than having more people. You know, it's like I'm in a fight, and it's the more people you have on your side, it makes that fight a little easier. So would I love some more help? Oh boy, would I! And I know that it's coming. I have some exciting news I'm wanting to share with you. I will say it for you, hot off the press. But yes, the answer to your question is, I'm holding up. Wouldn't have it any other way. Would I like some more help? Absolutely.
Well, that's well said, Scott. In closing, I've fired so many questions at you, but I'd like to just open it up to you to cover anything that's coming up or anything that I have missed, and we appreciate your being here, and we're all interested to know what's going on from without Peter asking, but just from the mind of Scott Hall.
Well, I'm so glad. We have some exciting news. We have some new advisory board members, and we have some new honorary board members. So I unfortunately don't have their last names on all of them. So, but I do know two of the honorary board members, and they're Thea Guild, and she was on a TV show, Queer as Folk, and then there's Charlie David, who is on Dante's Cove, and they're both decided to come on board with us, and it's very exciting. Thea has been very supportive ever since she had the opportunity to see it, and she had informed me that she was wanting to be on, and I just haven't had the manpower and the resources to do a proper press release, and I thought your show would be a great place to announce it, and then we'll be sending out a press release probably, hopefully, first thing Monday, if not Friday, of all the details and all the exciting things that are upcoming. So, it's, like I said, always a pleasure to be on your show anytime. You want me on, just feel free to give me a holler. You know I'd be on every day to talk about it. So I want to thank you for all your hard work and look forward to hearing from you and hopefully being on the show again real soon with some real good news.
That's you are appreciated also, Scott. And again, that's gayamericanheroes.com or .net. Either will take you there. It's a redirect. So Gay American Heroes, you can find out all about the organization. That is a In fact, the website is extensive. That thing took a lot of work, Scott. Did you do that?
That was all volunteer work. It was from our good friends at Fight Out Loud, and that's another great organization. They were the they're great people. It's Wayman Hudson, and he's a cutie, he's a sweetheart, and he does a lot for the community. And so Fight Out Loud's helping us with that, and he's donating all that. So be sure to look them up. But of course, you can see them on most every page. So all I have to do is click on Fight Out Loud or any one of the other great organizations that we have on board. You know, anywhere from PFLAG to Safe School South Florida, and find out all about these great organizations that are making it possible that you will one day be able to live safely here in America and not worry that you're holding their hand of your boyfriend or girlfriend.
Well, Scott, we're awfully proud of you here, and we honestly are. It's a bold endeavor, and I can't think of anyone that I would rather be fighting the battle than you, because you're a sincere, genuine person, and I'm very, very proud to have you on the team. Not that I'm the official welcomer.
Thank you. I hope I do everyone proud. I come from humble beginnings, and there's nothing special about me other than I have a really big heart. So that's what leads me everywhere I go.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you. Always a pleasure, and I look forward to hearing from you after the show to tell me anything I forgot or just to talk. So whenever you want to talk,
okay. Thank you, Scott. Thank you.
All right, good evening to you, sir.
Soon.
Good night.
Thank you. Bye. And, folks, that was Scott Hall. Scott Hall came to us from South Florida. I believe he's in the Fort Lauderdale area, although I'm not entirely sure. They're probably, you know, Florida. They're basically two places in Florida. There's South Florida and there's North Florida. Beyond that, you do not need to know. Oh, Lord have mercy. What a state. North Florida is, of course, an extension of South Georgia, and South Florida is an entirely different flavor. In fact, even the geography changes. When you drive just a short distance south of Tallahassee, things begin to look much more like Florida. Tallahassee, of course, looks like South Georgia, rolling hills, oak trees, and you drive just a little way south, and suddenly there's the white sand and the palm trees, and it turns into the Florida that you all know and love. And thank you, Scott, for joining us this evening. I'm going to do a story here that is a summary of the damage done by the idiot boy in the White House and his appointments, not to the Supreme Court, but his appointments to various departments in the government. And we'll do a break after that. You know, back when 9/11 occurred, we were all given a good strong dose on the mainstream media at what the religious zealots were doing in the Middle East. We got a good look at Afghanistan, and we got a good look at what religious zealots do when they gain control of government. The images, in fact, these images whipped us up into supporting the war, many of us. Television images of women being beaten, they were forced to wear burqas, they were banned from schools. We heard these things. We heard about the evils of a religious government or a theocracy. Women were banned from the workplace. All of this helped build strong support for the idiot-in-chief's decision to invade Afghanistan/Iraq after 9/11. But even as George denounced the brutal Islamic fundamentalist regime, according to some, he was quietly laying the foundations for his own fundamentalist regime right here in the U.S. I disagree with that. I think the man is not capable of laying the foundations of anything. Anything the man touches crumbles. Obviously, he was the puppet I even hate to say the religious right. Perhaps they were duped also. But nonetheless, the administration, the people behind him, the people that made his mouth move, were in fact quietly laying the foundation for a fundamentalist regime right here in the United States. And it was the first time the Christian fundamentalists had one of their own in the White House, and Jimmy Carter was certainly not a fundamentalist, but he perhaps had more ties than some of the others to the Christian fundamentalists. Since taking over the White House, they have rolled back decades of health and family planning, that they saw as unchristian. Of course, this was heartily endorsed by the powers that put him in office, and simply because it was the disassembling of the United States government. We know that the actual quote has come from that direction, that the best thing to do is to drown the government in the bathtub, meaning all the social services. In any case, the Christian fundamentalists were whipped up and very much in favor of rolling back decades of health and family planning. Since about 2001, there have been dozens and dozens of far-right Christian fundamentalists that were quietly installed, not like the Supreme Court, but more quietly installed into positions in the Department of Health and Human Services, the Federal Drug Administration, the FDA, on countless commissions and advisory committees. These dozens in turn hired dozens more and placed them in key higher level positions, such that the tentacles of this the Bush crime family has spread all throughout the government. In fact, it will take years and untold amounts of roach spray to ever get rid of them. They have made great progress in destroying this country. We see that in 2004, it was just 3 years after the administration was put in office by the courts, that the United States had become the most rigid in terms of sexual behavior and sexual health and reproductive rights, the most rigid in the Western world. It started immediately after George first grinned his way into the White House. One of the very first things he did was issue an executive memorandum to reinstate a global abortion gag rule. And that rule was first implemented, if you recall, under Ronald Reagan, but it was revoked during the two Clinton administrations. It was immediately put back, one of his first acts. The rule prohibited federally funded family planning providers from even discussing, even mentioning abortion within their clinics. Bush's order, of course, reflected the views of the very far reaches of the Christian right. These are people who say that by any means, by no means, may a woman control sexual reproduction because it's unbiblical. This means, of course, even saying no to your husband, because a wife is, of course, to be subservient and to do her duty and make herself available at all times. For her to say no would be to control reproduction. Of course, this is not a federal statute, but it's one of the underlying aspects of it. Complete control taken away from women for their reproductive rights. We have Joseph Schindler. He's a pro-life action leaguer. Says, I would like to outlaw contraception. He's speaking for the government. Contraception is disgusting. People using each other for pleasure. Of course, this immediately defines Joseph as being the sociopath and the it's all about me type personality that he is. It's impossible for Joseph to visualize any sort of affection and even intimate contact as being for anything other than the pleasure of Joseph Schindler. It's completely out of his frame of thinking that people would engage in intimacy to please the other. It's disgusting. Contraception's disgusting, he says. People using each other for pleasure. We have Randall Terry, Operation Rescue. When George entered the White House, said, I don't think Christians should use birth control. Well, I'm sure that's biblical. You consummate your marriage as often as you like, and if you have babies, you have babies. Gee, I wonder if Bush ever used birth control. Certainly his father should have. Over the next 12 months, the administration moved very quickly install as many Christian fundamentalists to positions of authority as they possibly could to influence all matters related to reproductive and sexual health. Here's a little summary. Dr. Alma Golden was appointed Deputy Assistant Secretary of Population Affairs. She was a Texas pediatrician. She's been a longtime proponent of abstinence as the only acceptable means of birth control. Dr. Golden declared that henceforth the department will stress abstinence only as the solution to unwanted pregnancy. Of course, this applied not only to teenagers but to unmarried and married adults as well. Tom Coburn was a former Republican congressman and one of the more rabid anti-condom crusaders. And no condom. This is called the fear of latex. He was appointed co-chair of the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV and AIDS. Imagine that, an anti-condom zealot on the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV and AIDS. What a shame what this country has come to. While he was in Congress, Coburn tried to force condom manufacturers to label condoms as ineffective against the spread of a sexually transmitted infection. He said, "I will challenge the national focus on condom use to prevent the spread of HIV." But he challenged it in the way Republicans always challenge, by brute force and covert activity and simply my way or the highway. Normally in this country, when one challenges in the government, there is an open discourse where facts are exchanged and experts are called together and there's much discussion. But he just skipped through all that because there's never a rational basis for any of their thoughts. His challenge was simply to use brute force. And there was Dr. Joseph McElhaney. He was appointed to the HIV AIDS Advisory Council. Now, has gone a long, long time and has a well-documented history of, well, just lying about data on condom failures. He was appointed to this council in spite of the fact that in 1995, when George was the governor of Texas, George's own Texas Commissioner of Health openly denounced McElhaney's anti-condom propaganda. It was called propaganda at the time, in other words, lies. He was also challenged on his professional credibility. But in spite of all of that, he was still put in the HIV and AIDS Advisory Council. Here's Dr. David Hager. Now, he was appointed to the FDA's Reproductive Health Drugs Advisory Committee. Dr. Hager served as a spokesperson for the Christian Medical Association and wrote the book, As Jesus Cared for Women, Restoring Women Then and Now. And I'm sure he means restoring it to the image that he has for women, as opposed to any biblical description. Restoring women to what they ought to be. He co-wrote that book and recommended scripture reading and prayer to relieve PMS. I assume that this is to make the woman more readily available to her husband should she feel badly with PMS. And, of course, it also puts the husband in the position of saying, honey, you're just not praying. You don't love me right. You don't pray or you wouldn't have this PMS. Now, Dr. Hager opposes prescribing contraceptives to unmarried women, and he backed a petition. In fact, he organized it by Christian Medical Association to revoke the FDA's approval of the so-called morning after pill. And there's Dr. Joseph Stanford. The list goes on. He was appointed to the Reproductive Health Drugs Advisory Committee. Dr. Stanford is on record for his belief that the only acceptable form of contraception, besides abstinence, is the all-natural rhythm method. And so many, I can fairly safely say this as a DJ, there's so many of us whose rhythm just ain't right. Dr. Stanford refuses to prescribe contraceptives, stating that modern medicine is permeated with attitudes towards sexuality and fertility that are incompatible with Christian values and the sanctity of life, your Christian values, sir. Incompatible with marriage, incompatible with procreation, attitudes that reflect and perpetuate the recreational approach to sexuality found in our culture. You notice that affection and love is always stripped out. I'm referring to LGBT folks. And even to you straight folks, apparently. Apparently, whenever you do it, you're not going to have a baby. It's just recreational. And there's Susan Crockett. She is the third Christian fundamentalist to be appointed to that very same FDA committee. Crockett served as a board member of the American Association of Pro-Life Gynecologists and Obstetricians. She co-authored Using Hormone Contraceptives in a Decision Involving Science, Scripture, and Conscience. And she's also part of a book, The Reproductive Revolution, A Christian Appraisal of Sexuality, Reproductive Technology in the Family. And then, of course, when stem cell came up, Bush, the research, of course, Bush dismissed two members of his council on bioethics because they strongly supported the use of stem cell research. They were immediately replaced by three new members who were from the Pro-Life Family Research Council. And the reason was that the White House gave was that they fall more in line with the president's pro-life view. You see, it's not just the Supreme Court. The entire government, from top to bottom, is infested with these primates. Now, of course, information itself was a prime target of this Christian Taliban. The president said publicly that he respects good science when making public policy. Of course, a lot hinges on whether he thinks the science is good, especially when it comes to family planning. See, good science, whenever it clashes with biblical fundamentalist beliefs, science loses every time. Back in 2001, this is right off the bat, right off home plate, the Christian Taliban scrubbed federal information sources of all the offending material. The censorship campaign was commented on by Representative Waxman. He sent a formal letter to the Secretary of Human Services demanding an explanation for the removal of information on the Health and Human Services website of scientific findings by the National Cancer Institute that, contrary to the anti-choice propaganda, that abortions do not lead to an increase in breast cancer. But Thompson, when questioned about it, never bothered to respond. Some of the other things removed were scientific data on condom usage. It was removed and replaced by sermons on abstinence. The phrase reproductive health was removed and replaced by terms like related clinical preventative health services. In other words, something you would never click on. Links to any non-government family planning resources were deleted. Websites at the Centers of Disease Control and the National Institute of Health were cleared of any scientific studies and materials related to abortion or condom use. At the CDC, there was the results of a peer-reviewed study showing that education about condom use did not actually result in increased sexual activity. That was deleted from the website. Goes on and on. This is in the name of good science. So instead, there is a significant amount of evidence that the scope and scale of this manipulation is staggering. There is a well-established pattern of suppression. It will take years to clear this up. And Dr. Mark Allen Ludwig says, contrary to popular opinion, the Bible is not neutral about what kind of government we should have. And this at the same time they're criticizing the Taliban in the Middle East. God gave governments responsibility only for infrastructure and defense. If the government would just limit itself to those functions, in other words, destroy the government, let the old people go back to starving in their shacks, as we did before the arrival of Social Security, if the government would just limit itself to infrastructure and defense and get completely out of education, health care, farming, etc., it could better defend America. It's Christians. Christians who carefully study the Bible are best qualified to teach not just the United States, to teach the world how it should be governed. God help us. You could take those words right out of the Taliban and the fatwas. But nonetheless, we all rallied because we hated what we were seeing happening under the control of a Christian or a religious government anyway in the Middle East. We rallied behind that, only to have it rise here. There are a lot of mainstream Christians who are very concerned over the working of the Bush Taliban. They're speaking at a national press conference, the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. A Reverend Carlton Veasley condemned backdoor attempts by Bush to radically alter policies and practices concerning family planning and sexuality to conform to an extreme view. But isn't that what we always see from the Bush administration, the backdoor? You see, that's the only way civilized people will let them in. No civilized person would have them in the living room via the front door, recognizing the vermin for what they are. Yes, my friends, it will take a truckload of roach spray to clean this government up. Mixing religious dogma and public policies always, always, always creates an explosive compound, and it always blows up. Okay, rambled on for a while. Enjoyed talking to Scott. Wanted to tell you that story. It's far more than the Supreme Court, my friends. And can you imagine the further damage done by McCain? More Supreme Court appointments? More of these cockroaches in the government scurrying around with their hidden agendas? They talk about the homosexual agenda. Good God in heaven. Let's pick things up a bit. I received a brand new remix from our dear friend Glenn Rivera in the mail the other day. And I was delighted that he had remixed this track. It's by a group called Jade. It's an old track I used to play in the 80s. It was one of my all-time favorites. It was called I'm Gonna Get Your Love. In any case, Glenn has restructured and remixed it, and it's just fabulous. And I was just thrilled to hear it. It brought back a lot of memories from the day. And we haven't played one of Glenn's restructured mixes in a while. You can find out all about Glenn at shadesof70s.com. That's shadesof70s, spelled out, .com. And let's just relax and have some fun with it. I'm Gonna Get Your Love, Glenn Rivera Restructure Mix by Jade.
riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential, a man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
Thank you, Agnes. It's been a while since I've heard you say those lines. What a thrill to hear the promo again. Agnes found it. The top of the hour comeback music. Thank you, Agnes. Man who knows his way around a pair of chaps, indeed. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That's 877-443-2366. You're welcome to participate. The toll line, if you have unlimited long distance, is area code 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia. And email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And I do try to check that mail during the breaks. Let's have a look here and see what's next on the hit list this evening. You know, Pam's House Blend, I was doing it, reported yesterday. We didn't get to it, actually, yesterday. It's just as well because there's follow-up news on it today. You recall yesterday we did the story regarding the North Carolina governor who was on stage with Ms. Hillary and Ms. Mara, the governor's wife in North Carolina. You know, I don't mean to make fun of the North Carolina accent. I assure you, North Florida is just as, what's the word? Similar. That's a good word. Pam reports, stop messing with my primary. You see, Pam is from North Carolina, lives in North Carolina. She says, something stinks to high heaven, and the state attorney should look into it. Calls are going out to black households. Yes, indeed. The robocalls are back. They're incredibly similar to calls that were received in Ohio and Virginia, passing along misinformation about voter registration, primarily to black families. There's a caller who identifies himself as Lamont Williams. Now, this has been revealed by the Institute for Southern Studies. African-American households, by and large, are receiving anonymous robocalls with misleading information about voting. Facing South, which is the other organization involved in reporting this, has learned that these calls are very similar to tactics used in Virginia, Ohio, and there is suggestion that it may be linked to a national voter deception strategy. And the additional news that came out today, yes, in fact, it is national. Facing South learned that voters in Virginia received the calls of the same message before the state's February 12 primaries. The Virginia State Board of Elections viewed it as an attempt at identity theft and not voter disenfranchisement. But that story is not the story they're sticking to today. Agnes, let's let them hear that this was captured on a telephone answering machine as one of the first calls to hit the North Carolina area. Bob, Agnes, please run the North Carolina black vote call, Robo.
At 7:13 p.m., April 24, from 1020.
Hello, this is Lamont Williams. In the next few days, you will receive a voter registration packet in the mail. All you need to do is fill it out, sign it, date and return your application. Then you will be able to vote and make your voice heard. Please return your registration form when it arrives. Thank you.
Curiouser and curiouser, said Alice. Who's behind the mysterious robocalls? Who's spreading the misleading voter information that has confused and frustrated thousands of folks in North Carolina over the last week? Well, Facing South has confirmed that the source of the calls are from an organization in Washington, D.C., a well-funded and deeply embedded and highly connected organization called Women's Voices, Women Vote. That is a D.C.-based nonprofit which claims that it is attempting to boost voting amongst unmarried women voters. Now, what's more, Facing South has learned that the Women's Vote has been under a firestorm of controversy. Women's Voices tactics have caused thousands of voter complaints in at least 11 states, It's brought condemnation from election officials and officials of the state. In every state, they are complaining of the misleading nature and likely violation of election laws. Now, the recap are beginning with yesterday's news is that North Carolina residents reported receiving peculiar automated calls from someone claiming to be Lamont Williams. The caller says that a voter registration packet is coming in the mail and that the recipient should sign it and mail it back to be registered to vote. No other information is provided. And by the way, this is a black hole telephone call. It does not identify. There's no way to trace it back to, at least from any standard telephone user, even with caller ID, there's no way to trace it back to the Women's Voices, Women's Vote, the well-funded, well-connected Washington, D.C. nonprofit. The call is, in fact, deceptive because, check it out, the deadline has already passed for mail-in registrations for North Carolina's May 6th primary. And there are also many who received the calls like, Kevin Farmer in Durham. Now, Kevin is the fellow who made this recording, and he's already registered. The call suggests that the recipient is not registered, and it's caused widespread confusion amongst hundreds and hundreds of people, including many, many from African-American voters who had received the calls and thought they were registered. And, of course, they're concerned. Anybody remember the elections we've had for the last few presidential cycles? The huge, widespread disenfranchisement of the African-American voter. The calls are also very likely illegal. Farmer is a white man, by the way. He's in no way should be targeted by Women's Voices, Women's Vote, but especially he's targeting unmarried African-American women voters. But in any case, the calls are use a blocked phone number. There's no contact information. It violates the North Carolina rules for robocalls. There is a statute number called out. The Attorney General further stated in a recent memo that the identifying information must be clear enough to allow the recipient to complain or seek redress. This is, of course, not provided with these robocalls. It's also a Class 1 felony in North Carolina to misrepresent the law to the public through mass mailing or any other means of communication where the intent and the effect is to intimidate or discourage potential voters from exercising their lawful right to vote. The calls have been denounced by the North Carolina State Board of Elections, as well as by voter advocacy groups, including Democracy North Carolina. It has called them another in a long line of deceptive practices used in North Carolina and elsewhere that target particularly African-American voters. Yesterday, the person who wrote the article, Chris Kroom, talked to the Virginia State Police. They've been investigating these suspicious robocalls that occurred before the Virginia primary last February. They also concluded that the source of the call was Women's Voices, Women Vote. Now, Facing South contacted Women's Voices, and staffer Sarah Johnson confirmed that they were doing similar robocalls in North Carolina, and later they finally admitted that they were indeed the ones behind the deceptive Lamont Williams call. So, you know, look at it, folks. Women's Voices, Women's Voices. Now, why are they making it so shadowy? Why are they making it in such a legally questionable way and causing the North Carolina voters so many headaches? And, in fact, making these calls after the deadline to even register voting, it's not like these people don't have the resources to know exactly when all the voter registrations are due in each state that they're targeting. This is not a mystery. This is a well-funded organization. It is intentional, my friends, that these calls are going out at the time they are going out. They have released the fact that the North Carolina calls are part of a 24-state effort to target 3 million voters, especially unmarried women. The robocalls never mention Women's Voices, Women's Vote, and they're followed by mailings that include information on how to register to vote, and they plan to mail some over 250,000 packets in North Carolina alone. So since last November, in at least 11 states nationwide, the Women's Voices have worked through Voter Participation Center. That's a project. They've named the project that. They have developed a very dark and checkered reputation. They have been rebuked and criticized from leading election officials and thousands of complaints for their secretive tactics, their deceptive mailings, and their very, 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 it's just plain noticeable that they have a penchant for just, you know, skirting the law, sort of violating it, you know, sort of getting around it. In Arizona last November, election officials were inundated with complaints after Women's Voices sent a mailing that claimed that the recipients were required, check it out, required to mail back an enclosed voter registration form. It implied that they were not registered to vote. Many who received the mailings were already registered, of course, but doubted that. Their calls flooded into the election offices. The mailings also gave the wrong registration date. The Secretary of State Jan Brewer denounced the group's tactics after a similar mailing in Colorado. In Wisconsin, state officials singled out Women's Voices for misleading and disenfranchising. Honestly, I can't talk. It's just been a long day. It was a no-nap day. And disenfranchising voters. They stated in a press release that one group in particular, Women's Voices, Women's Vote of Washington, D.C., apparently ignored or disregarded state deadlines in seeking voter registrations. And they sent these mails and made these calls past the January 30 deadline, causing hundreds of Wisconsin voters to think they were not registered and they did not vote. Michigan officials were fielding thousands and thousands of calls from confused voters after Women's Voices did a February mailing to almost 500,000 unmarried women, including deceased folks and white men. And by the way, if they're targeting black women, why are they using a man's voice? There was a 1.5 million piece mailer that was sent in Florida that falsely stated, to comply with state voting requirements, please return the enclosed application. What state voting requirement? The Pasco County election supervisor called it disingenuous, which is Southern speak for lies. He said that created a lot of unnecessary panic on behalf of the voters. So by about March, they were backing off the registration is required language, but there are still problems in Arkansas. And the clerk in Washington County reported that the majority of the forms sent back to the county came from registered voters, which caused needless work. It's also been documented they're active in Louisiana, Kentucky, and Ohio. And each of the states, they are charged with deceptive claims and misrepresentations of the law. Their timing is always dead accurate. It's always dead accurate in the sense that it is made just after it's time to register, the legal cutoff for registering in your state. Example, they made the calls 10 days before the critical Virginia primary, but 2 weeks after the voting deadline. They do this in state after state after state. This is a well-funded organization that knows these things. This is intentional, quite obvious. Because of the timing, some of the states thought that this was an identity theft scheme, but when they were questioned about it, they just they were basically unapologetic. They issued a boilerplate press release talking about how successful the program is. Some have questioned the ties between Women's Voices and Democratic presidential candidate Senator Hillary Clinton. The director of the organization, Gardner, for example, contributed $2,500 to Clinton's Hill PAC on May in 2006, and in March of 2005, she donated a total of $4,200 to Clinton, according to the Center for Responsive Politics. She has not contributed anything to the Obama campaign. The executive director of the organization, Joe Good, worked for Bill Clinton's election campaign in 1992 as a pollster and he was intimately involved in the development and implementation of all polling and focus groups done for the presidential primary and general election campaigns for Clinton. Now, the Women's Voices board members include John Podesta, who is a former chief of staff for President Bill Clinton, who donated $2,300 to Hillary Clinton's April 19, 2007. That's according to OpenSecrets.org. Podesta also donated $1,000 to Barack Obama, to be fair, back in 2004. But that was well before Obama announced his candidacy for president. Sounds a little bit like they're trying to confuse the black voters to keep them away from the polls, don't you think? The reports from all the states are very disturbing. There is a pattern of mass confusion. It is intentional. This organization knows when the voter registration deadlines are. They send it intentionally after the deadline to confuse people into thinking they are not registered. These are highly skilled political operatives, says Democracy's North Carolina's Bob Hall. Bob Hall told Facing South that these are highly skilled political operatives, and it just doesn't add up. At this moment, it is our first priority to stop the robocalls and prevent the chaos and potential disenfranchisement. Boy, I got it that time. Caused by the group sending almost 250,000 packets of registration forms to North Carolina a few days before the primary and well after the time of registration had passed. Hall said the group has begged the group to stop the mailing, but Women's Voices has refused to do so. Even though the mail-in voter registration passed on April the 11th, the calls keep coming, the packets keep coming. They're just refusing to do so. Do you think the goal of the group is to actually get unmarried women to vote or some rigmarole? And what a perfect cover. And what a perfect scandal. That's what they're trying to do. They're targeting black unmarried women to get them out to vote. Yet, doing it in such a way, intentionally, I might add, these are not stupid people. They're well-funded. They know what the dates are in all the states. Doing it in such a way as to disrupt the elections. Bob Hall is telling folks now that Women's Voices is now trying to, here's the air of cooperation. They're trying to stop the North Carolina mailing, but the mailing has apparently left the mailhouse. But there's still a chance it can be stopped before it gets into the mail. I doubt it. Typical black bag operation. Typical black ops operation to affect disenfranchisement of the voters. Of course, the mainstream media isn't telling us a word about it. You shall not hear it on the mainstream media. Now, if these folks are indeed supporting Hillary, they're one thing or the other. They are either a black ops organization doing this intentionally, or they're perhaps the most incompetent organization on the planet. Considering they're well-funded and well-connected to Washington, D.C., I rather doubt that. And I mean that in the kindest, gentlest possible way. I want to tell you a quick story about Florida. We are about to get a Christian license plate. Yes, we are. The Florida vanity plates will be the first in the nation to explicitly promote a specific religion. The license plates would feature a cross placed in front of a stained glass window just to the left-hand side of the tag number, with the words, I believe. The Florida legislature is considering these dates, designed very carefully. The plate sponsor is saying, well, people can believe in their college or their university, or they can believe in their football team. We have specialty plates for all of that. And they can buy license plates and we have license plates in Florida for supporting manatees and for the raising funds for the Florida Panthers. Not a team, but literally we have Panthers in Florida called Florida Panthers. No Panthers. The article has a lot more information, and I'll hit some of the points. But, you know, kids, a license plate is nothing more than a metal receipt. It is simply a receipt, the form of a piece of metal that says you paid your taxes. What in the name of everything holy is the state of Florida endorsing? You know, the $25 you pay extra for the plate, it goes directly to whatever organization that you're funding. You know, there was a bill a while back where we had a Trust God license plate that was proposed in 2003 that would have given money to the Christian radio stations. Now, somehow, by the grace of God, that got canceled in Florida. But can you imagine following a car with a license plate that the monies went to support the same radio stations that beat the hell out of the LGBT community every single day with the Hagees and the Dobsons? You know, there was a time that the word Christian meant something. Now it just means hate speech. Yeah, let's fund that. There's an I Believe plate. It's supposed to go to profit to support faith-based school activity. You know, this mixture of church and state is getting pretty damn old. You know. And in fact, if people want to give $25 to save the Florida Panther or save the Florida manatee, by all means, damn well do it. But what's it doing on a tax receipt? And it seems that Florida is leading the nation in this incredible number of license plates for supporting everything from, what is it? One is Support Life. There's Family First ones. There's In God We Trust ones. There's Florida State University ones. There's every university in the state has got a license plate. And then the $25 you pay extra is supposed to go to support those organizations. Fine. But a $25 donation to go to Christian radio stations? You know, this separation of church and state, you know, kids, that protects the church, too. It protects the church from somebody like me going off on them on a radio show. You know, and who's to stop them? You know, I'm really pretty sick of the slippery slope arguments. I mean, we've heard the slippery slope argument about, well, if we let the gays get married, the next thing you know, they're going to want to marry their dogs, or it'll be three men and a chihuahua, or six women and a little girl. But, you know, so the slippery slope arguments don't mean much to me anymore. But there's an interesting point raised by the ACLU. Why not a Ku Klux Klan plate? License plate. Why not a I Don't Believe plate? That would support atheists and atheist organizations. Why not? You know, the license plate sponsor, one of the senators, Senator Bullard, he says that all groups should be able to express their preferences. But if the atheists said they wanted an I Don't Believe plate, I would oppose it. Gee, did I just hear him say that maybe the Ku Klux Klan should get a plate? I want to be sure that all groups express their preferences. Everybody but the ones who want a plate that says, I don't believe. You know, Florida, get out of the vanity plate. You know, if you want a bumper sticker, buy a bumper sticker. If you want to send somebody $25, send them $25 to support the manatees or to support Christian radio. Hell, send it right into one of the faith healers' pockets. I don't care. But get the license plate out of it. I'm just up to here with I've rambled so much tonight. You can tell I didn't get a nap today. I stumble and pause. I'm an old and cranky guy, really. Everybody thinks I'm so much fun. But just ain't so. Listen, I want to let you know that we're going to be heading out now. We're going to change the pace this evening. We're going to head out to the gay bar across the street, sometimes known as the Paradise Dance Hall. And tonight we have none other than, hello, Victor. That is VJC from Disco935.net in New York. It is a custom mix by Victor for Strictly Confidential. And we are very proud to have Victor in the chat room. At least he was there for a second. He might have fallen in and fallen out. But, yeah, there he is. Hi, Victor. And we're also very glad to have him at the gay bar across the street. So gather up your umbrellas and your pocketbooks and your Florida vanity plates, and let's head over across the street to the little gay bar. Hit it, Agnes.
Hello, it's VJC on Disco 93.5 and Strictly Confidential Radio. Kicking it off with Space Project, Conquest of the Stars. It's non-stop, 20-minute mix. Yours truly, VJC. Enjoy the ride. Enjoy the memories from back in the day. Venus Space Project back to back. Mission to Lyra. I'm BJC. Hello. Enjoy the ride of memories from back in the day. The obscure disco that nobody plays. Except Disco 93.5, of course. And Strictly Confidential Radio. Hello, it's BJC. in Space, Tango in Space, 1977. We're digging deep into the crates. Hello, it's BJC. What's up, Peter? Check me out at www.disco935.com. You'll find all the information about Disco 935 and everything else. Hello, it's BJC. Oh, and this is Space again. Carry on, turn me on. The year was 1977. Thank you. You're in the mix. You're in the mix with DJ CJC.
Thank you, Victor. It's VJC, disco935.net in New York City. Victor plays live an awful lot on that station and has a ball doing it. Stop by disco935.net and you'll enjoy Victor anytime you like. Thank you, Victor, for doing the stint across the street tonight. It's always appreciated, Victor. You know, I wanted to mention, too, that tomorrow night we have a DJ at the gay bar across the street who has only been with us once before. He is our DJ from Holland, from the Netherlands. It is Martin Verlan, has done a mega mix for us of Italo Disco, and it's another wonderful piece from Martin. I would love to hear from him more often, but we'll have Martin. In fact, Martin sampled my voice at the beginning of the track, and oh, my stars, you just never know what these DJs are going to do. But that will be tomorrow evening, and this evening was Victor VJC. A couple of minor points I want to make that I didn't get to this evening. Won't take long. Just good news. We'll try to do some good news. Everything has been so heavy this evening. Thank you, Victor, for lifting us out of that. I wanted to point out that the Safe Schools Coalition, the anti-bullying law that took 8 years to pass in Florida, that passed today. I wanted to point out that it was clearly stated in open session. The question was asked, does the bill prohibit harassment based on a student's actual or perceived disability, ethnicity, national origin, gender identity, physical appearance, sexual orientation, or other distinguishing personal characteristics in exactly the same way that it prohibits sexual, racial, or religious harassments? And the answer to that, spoken in open Senate, was yes, it does. So not only is it an anti-bullying bill, it is one that has been thoroughly discussed as to the intent of the law, and it's about time. Another quick note here, I just couldn't pass up. What do Tulsa, Oklahoma, Plano, Texas, Fort Wayne, Indiana, Anchorage, Alaska, and Jacksonville, Florida, what do they have in common? Well, the Advocate says that they are the top five emerging cities for gays and lesbians. Well, knock me over with a flower. Tulsa ranked, number 77 in 2000, they're up to number 46 in terms of per capita of LGBT couples. Plano, Texas, and this is really shocking, moved from number 98 to number 16 in the country. Blow me away. Fort Wayne from 90 to 52. Anchorage from 74 to 54 in the nation. Jacksonville from 63 to 44. These are the fastest growing LGBT emerging cities in the country. Imagine that. And Jacksonville's only about, 150, almost 200 miles from here? There is hope for me yet. I might run away to Jacksonville. kind of doubt it, though. Don't really want to. Want to thank Guy James again for filling in earlier this evening. Guy James is a wonderful and experienced and well-loved host here on the Head On Radio Network. He runs his show in the afternoon, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays from 3 till 5 p.m., and he is live from South Florida, and takes calls the same as all of the other shows in the Head On Radio Network, and we are so pleased to have had Guy filling in for us. He did an excellent job at the spur of the moment. Thank you. And this I wanted to point out to you. We've talked so much about how hard Hagee was sought after by McCain. Of course, Hagee has a long history of anti-Catholic statements and anti-gay statements, but nonetheless, he was hotly sought after for an endorsement by McCain. One of his most commonly quoted remarks is that New Orleans was struck down because of the gay folks there. He publicly has blamed it many, many times. There was going to be what he called a massive homosexual rally there on the Monday following the storm. And he said on the radio, and in multiple occasions, that God has punished that sinful rally by taking out the city. Took it out biblical style, says Hagee. He even maintained that position this week while he was talking on his Texas-based radio show. But just over the last 2 days, he has sort of retracted. You know, you can play with the Bible verses any way you want. He's saying that I'm backing off for the candidate's sake. He says it's not so much a retraction, meaning I really mean it, but I'm just backing off a little for the candidate's sake. So I just like everything else, religion is negotiable because that's simply how it's done. I want to thank the chat moderators and the news ninjas who are in constant pursuit of the truth and send us wonderful articles to keep the shows on the air. And I appreciate that you joined us this evening. I hope you'll join us again tomorrow. We'll have a guest from the LGBT Aging Project in Massachusetts. And in closing, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you, too.
Music happens when the sheet music gets put aside and the gang just sits down and jams. Same thing here on The Horn, America's best liberal talk hosts free-forming together for an hour a night. Welcome to The Horn Section.